Today's program has been brought to you by Seersucker, located at 329 Smith Street in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. Check out their new restaurant, Nightingale 9, at www.seersuckerbrooklyn.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, and welcome to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today we're coming to you live from Roberto's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen live every Thursday at 11 a.m. on heritageradionetwork.org or download the podcast at iTunes. Today, my guest is illustrator Alex Ebenmeyer. Thanks for being with us, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
I knew I was going to be a fan of Alex's from pretty early on. Our first meeting took place on a street hockey court on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, where we both played on teams for the Blacktop Street Hockey League, otherwise known as BTSH. And while Alex's hockey skills were matched only by his impressive artwork, the other thing that really made me admire him was his great appreciation for cats. So I promise this interview won't be entirely about cats and hockey or our shared love of donuts, but they will be involved. So
excellent.
I hope you're prepared, Alex.
Yes.
So I want to start at the beginning, though, because your artwork is the primary reason we're talking. What was the very first thing you remember drawing when you were little?
Oh, wow. You started went straight back there.
I mean the beginning.
The beginning.
The beginning.
Way back when.
And was it a donut?
It was not a donut. I will have to tell you, I don't have a perfect memory of the first thing. Thinking back to that, probably my first useful memory of drawing. I have two siblings, older brother, younger sister. And my older brother was always interested in drawing. And I remember the two of us would sit down and do these tag team sort of drawings where he'd sort of put out a landscape and then I'd draw something on top of it. And this was not the first thing, because, you know, as a little kid, there was all sorts of mushes and stuff. But this was the first drawings that I really have a sort of a mental connection with.
Yeah.
And generally, they'd be about war and little
war, superheroes, little that sort of stuff.
Superheroes and tanks firing and airplanes. And
how much older is your brother?
He is 5 years older.
Oh, so that's got to be an age where, like, whatever he drew was cool.
Oh, my goodness. And you wanted to draw. My brother is the coolest individual in the world.
Is he still doing art?
No. He still paints on occasion and draws, but he's not working in the art field.
Were your parents very encouraging of art at an early age?
Extremely so.
Oh, good. Tell me how.
My mom did a lot of art in college and drawing. And one of my drawing heroes was, and now I'm going to forget his name, but there there were these classic books that have become repopularized recently, where it's sort of the step-by-step drawing, Ed Emberley.
Oh my gosh, and did he do the thumbprint ones as
he
well?
He did the thumbprint ones, and the big orange book of drawing, and the big purple book of drawing. And my father at that time was doing some traveling for work, and he'd come back, and I remember on multiple occasions he'd bring back the Ed Emberley big book of drawing, and my brother and I, my sister being 5 years younger, wasn't yet born, would just pour over this, drawing cats and dog-a-log and catalogs and all sorts of things. And that was sort of, and my parents all along were very supportive of this, probably, you know, too supportive, who knows. And had us, we were constantly drawing and doodling. And I remember on car trips, I'd be the one, we'd both be sitting there, you know, where you'd pack up your backpack for the car trip and you'd have tapes and books and all sorts of crap as a kid. You'd pack, you know, enough stuff for probably a month's worth of being away for a 2-day drive. And I'd always have a sketchbook with me even then.
That's great. I love that. I don't think that happens anymore. I feel like most people like pop a DVD in the back of some sort of minivan and that's what they do.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. Well, I want to talk about Philly a little bit.
Okay.
So you grew up in Philadelphia or outside of Philadelphia?
Technically inside Philadelphia.
Like right inside of a line you could step over?
I grew up in Germantown in West Mount Airy, which is inside of Philadelphia proper. And when my wife first saw this, she was like, you didn't grow up in Philly. I'm like, I grew up in Philly. Come on. She's like, there's too many trees and it's too pretty out here.
Well, how did Philadelphia shape sort of, or did it shape, like the way you draw, the things that inspire you? Do you think Philadelphia like plays a role in that?
I don't know about, I'm sure it does some way. I don't have, I've heard some people have these specific moments where they're like, oh, this city really formed me and, you know, caused me to look at things this way.
Or it can be the opposite. People just want to get out of there.
No, I always liked Philly. I almost like it better. I love it in retrospect. I love thinking that I'm from Philly. I think it's helped shape my personality. Can I curse on this radio show?
Yes, you can.
I'm a Philly asshole. Yeah. It's one of those things.
I was gonna say, are you a terrible sports fan?
I'm a terrible sports fan. I like mocking people and giving people shit and everything. So in that way, it sort of formed my personality, which has informed my drawings. I don't have a specific... I don't see it as something specific that's done that.
Yeah.
Sort of this overarching who I am has all come together.
Just the asshole sports fan part.
Exactly.
That's all right. It's an important part to hold on to. Let's talk about something a little bit further ahead. Let's move on to college. Okay. How did you decide where you were going to go?
That was actually a little bit of an escape. Being in Philadelphia, there's all the East Coast schools. And again, my parents were very supportive. You can go anywhere you want or anywhere you get in.
Your parents sound amazing.
My parents are great. They're wonderful people. Hi, Jim and Sandy. And they were very comfortable. I was looking around. My brother went to a school up in Massachusetts, and I had these dreams of these small liberal arts colleges on the East Coast because that's where everybody from my schools was looking and everything. And then I went to visit them, and I didn't really like them. And yeah. I was looking for a school with good art, but I wasn't confident enough to think of an actual art school.
Oh, okay.
And so I was looking for the perfect combination, which is usually what I'm looking for, which, you know, I'll look everywhere for this. And it's this mythical thing in my head. And so what I ended up finding was I went to school at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. And because they were a mid-sized university with an art school, and I went out there, and the Midwestern, I mean, the people in St. Louis were so warm and friendly when I got out there. I was like, holy crap, these people are nice. This is great. I'm getting the hell out of the way from the East Coast. And I got there, and I was actually going to be in the liberal arts section and then taking art classes. Because, again, I was like, well, I'm not comfortable taking an art, being an art school, but I want to make sure I get an important degree and something that I have no idea what I'll do with in the future. And pretty much the first day I went in there and was talking to the dean and told him what I was thinking. And he pretty much told me, you should be in the art school and then take classes in liberal arts, and that will work out better for you. You can specialize. It'll be much easier. You'll get a better education both ways.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap, I'm going to be in art school. Does that make sense? I got to call, you know, and this was one of those things that I could do on my own. They were comfortable just switching. So I called my parents. I'm like, this is what they told me to do, and it sounds great, and I'm nervous. Can I do it? And again, my parents were like, yeah, sure, whatever you want to do. That sounds great. Have at it.
Score another one for the Myers.
They're great. They have been completely supportive always.
That's awesome. Okay. So did you know you were going to focus on illustration, or were you doing something different first?
I actually knew I was going to focus on illustration, with the funny thing being I had no idea what illustration actually was. I was growing up, I always liked newspaper comics and editorial comics. Not so much comic books.
Yeah.
But that newspaper three-set strip, Garfield and Calvin Hobbes and all those were my favorites. And to me, that was illustration, which wasn't really illustration. But that's what I saw, something that was commercial art, commercial drawing. I'm not a painter. And that made sense to me, even though... So I studied illustration and still didn't quite know what it meant. So.
Yeah. Did you feel like your style evolved while you were in college, or do you feel like you kind of just came into the style that you have now?
There was a moment where we had a guest teacher who was looking through everybody's work, and he pointed out me and another friend, and when he was talking, you know, he sort of had a sample of everybody's drawings, and he looked at mine and goes, you've been drawing this way for like a long time. Like, it was really neat to see that someone has said, this style is something that you've been honing. Like, I didn't have this sort of like, not sure how I was drawing. So in that sense, I've actually been drawing, according to him, and actually I see this the same way for just a ton of years.
Yeah.
But in college, I was trying to mix that up, trying to figure out what was going on. My work was a mess. I can't look at any of that work. I mean, no one can, but I can't look at that work anymore.
Yeah.
But to that end, I still was working in a style that was growing from there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think a lot of artists, like, you can tell when you look at their work, that's definitely not a style they had, like, growing up or when they were, like, developing their skills. That's something they sort of came across. But to me, your work definitely has that feel of, like, you kind of knew who you were and knew what style you were going for, or at least, like, you were drawing from a place that was entirely natural and, like, couldn't be taught.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're coming out. I'm going to invite you over and we're going to go through the years of sketchbooks.
Well, let's talk about sketchbooks. I wanted to talk about this a little later, but we've mentioned sketchbooks so much. That's a huge part of what you do, is you have actually have a sketch blog as well. And your sketchbooks aren't, to me, as an art observer and not maker, they're not like traditional sketchbooks, and that you've always integrated like tape and other materials. And I read a bunch of interviews with you to prepare for this interview, and I love that. And I can't remember which one it was. You were talking about how you even try to incorporate mistakes, like if you're at a coffee shop and coffee spills and you try to incorporate that coffee spill into the artwork in some way. How do you approach sketchbooks, and why do you think you've always been so open with sharing them?
There's something about the sketchbook for me is, I've seen a lot of different sketchbooks, and some people have very formal sketchbooks. Some people have completely just scratch out sketchbooks. And I think of the sketchbook in general, especially for me, is how I think. I'm not a cerebral person. These thoughts don't happen in my head. And I sit there sipping a cup of tea going, that's going to be brilliant. few things happen that are going to be brilliant with me. And I just need, for me, the sketchbook is just some way that I can put down my thoughts, and I can have a flicker of an idea in my head, but if I just go from that and then I go straight to drawing it and final and everything like that, it doesn't work. I haven't conceived of every possible angle. So I need that physical sketchbook to get these ideas out. And it's like, I think it's an extension of how I think. So I mm-hmm. think sort of with my hands and drawing and when I'm doing this. So I also don't have these thoughts that I feel are so personal and, you know, need to be secluded. Yeah. I'm a fairly happy person. I'm not like there's everybody, you know, I want to say I have
there's
this
no
crazy dark side.
Inside.
There's no dark tortured artist here. Apologies to everyone. I'm not putting things down in the sketchbook that I'm worried that someone's going to see or ashamed of, or is this dark secret. So I'm perfectly happy to share them and show what's going on. And
one thing I'm always curious about, and I've heard this from different artists, is some people feel like they're worried to share sketchbooks because someone might steal from it or take an idea or see something that might be inspired by somebody else. Do you ever worry about that? Or do you feel like that's just kind of all part of the collective art experience?
Again, based on the lack of brilliance, I'm not terribly concerned about that. So have at it, everyone.
All right. We'll talk about sketchbooks a little bit more later. Before the break, I want to sort of cover the last base of early Alex. When I want to talk about your first job. After college, what was your first art-based job that you had, and how did that come about?
My first art-based job, when I first came to New York, I actually worked in web design.
Oh, that's right.
And that was because leaving school in 98, the internet was exploding. Hello, internet. And it was very exciting times, and so I went into, and I was very excited about the internet, and I basically, with some help from the school, although it was so new then, they didn't really even have a web design teacher, sort of taught myself web design and got myself in with a small design firm, or small design development firm, and started that way, and just with small projects and a young, excitable staff and ownership and everything, and went all in for the first 2 years with them.
Yeah.
And that was my first art job. Or creative job, but it wasn't my first illustration job.
What was your first illustration job?
My first illustration job, I think, was with the New York Press.
Oh, okay.
Which is a great way to, I mean, everyone says it's still a good way to start up for young illustrators is to go to the free papers, which it's a shame they're not nearly what they once were. But at that time, they were one of the, you know, the best ways to break into illustration. And I remember it was that illustration was a heavy metal band, or it was a noise. It was some crazy black rock band or something. And I don't know how it came to be, but I ended up making the guy's head into a Pez dispenser, and it was awesome.
That sounds great. I'm going to ask you more later about your like indie rock bird drawings with the emo hair. There's a lot of fun character work in your portfolio. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Alex Ebenmeyer.
Hey,
Nightingale 9, the latest venture from Chef Rob Newton and partner Kerry Diamond of Seersucker and Smith Canteen, will open its doors on February 21st, 2013. The restaurant, named for Nightingale 9, an old Brooklyn phone exchange, will feature Newton's interpretations of Vietnamese classics and street food, applying the same sourcing and quality standards he has in place at his other restaurants. Inspired by Robert's travels, the menu will feature a variety of rice noodle soups such as Berkshire pork with country ham, cracklins, lemongrass, and annatto. Newton especially loves the Vietnamese tradition of customizing one's food and allowing the diner to determine how spicy his or her dishes are. As a result, diners will be encouraged to use various dipping sauces, hot sauces, and herbs, all important components of the meal. Nightingale 9 is located at 345 Smith Street in Brooklyn and will be open for dinner on weekdays from 6 to 10 p.m., closed on Wednesdays, and from 6 to 11 p.m. on weekends. Lunch service will begin in the near future. For more information about the team behind Nightingale 9, visit SeersuckerBrooklyn.com.
Hey, welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today we're speaking with illustrator Alex Ebenmeyer. Before the break, we were talking about how Alex got started and pre-college artistic endeavors, and I want to jump forward a little bit now, the part where I get to brag on you and say all the good things you've done. You've had illustrations in the New York Times and Bloomberg and Newsweek and Chronicle Books and PC World and Topps Trading Cards, which I think is like the best fit for you ever. You've had your work in, which is I think the coolest thing, college textbooks, because we all know how ugly those are. So I wish I had gotten the college textbook that you had done, as well as the Wall Street Journal and Slate, among many, many others. And it's great to have work all over the place, but the thing I really admire and most about sort of the clients you've worked with is you have such a diverse range of people that you've done work for. How did you really work to build a clientele like that, or sort of a group of sources where your work is? How did you work to build something so diverse? It's got to be difficult.
I have no idea.
They all just came to you.
They all just showed up. That has been sort of the most exciting part for me, or one of the most exciting parts for me, is just how jobs beget jobs and projects turn into projects, and people I've worked with have friends or they go to different companies. And I'm always curious, actually, myself. And sometimes when an art director calls me, I'll actually ask them. I said, oh, how did you see my work?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a postcard I sent out. Sometimes it was via friends who I'm friends with, something they saw somewhere. There's rhyme and reason to it, but it's always interesting to see how that interconnection happens. And so I think it's just from a steady build up and more projects. There's from my studio and studio mates and people I'm friends with. And it's just sort of been this growing, I don't know, kind of mush of expansion and everything. And
yeah.
Again, it's really fun to see. And if I've worked with you and I haven't asked you how we came to be together, then I'm curious. Tell me.
Yeah.
But I do find that really interesting, and I don't have a specific answer, and it's just sort of grown over the years.
Well, it sounds like a lot of it is networking in the least gross sense of that word.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That like you have this really strong network of illustrators, and I think freelance illustrators and freelance writers have some of the hardest jobs out there, because especially in this economy,
we'd love to believe that. Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously out there are much physically more demanding jobs and things like that, but I think in terms of like really having to hustle to kind of get work because you're doing like spot illustrations and one page things, and they're not really these like large encompassing jobs that maybe people are used to if they're more traditional freelancers. So it makes me think a lot about how those connections are really strong and they're not competitive, which I find really interesting. You are part of the Pencil Factory, which is where Design Sponge also has its offices. And the thing I love so much about that building was that it just seems chock full of not only incredible illustrators, but illustrators that are really friendly and supportive of each other. What do you think it is about that group of illustrators that you guys seem to like support each other and not like fight for jobs?
Well, the interesting thing I've found about illustration is that there are times where we're competing for the same jobs, but especially with editorial work, and if you're working for the New York Times or any of these magazines, is it's not that they're like, hey, we have one illustration and it's either Alex or Grace. One of us is going to do it. It's more that, hey, we'll give this one to Grace this week or this month, and then next week, you know, we'll go with Alex. And so people aren't competing for the jobs. They're actually doing the same jobs, and it just depends when they get them. So.
Yeah.
There's almost a camaraderie where, to some extent, we're coworkers. We're not competing and kicking the other person out for a job. We're doing the same jobs, sometimes for different writers, sometimes for different editors, sometimes for the same. And there's actually, I think there's actually this interesting life in illustration where we can actually see how different people tackle the same jobs or the same, yeah. or work with different editors. Some people just cannot get along with an editor, where someone else is like, oh, they're great. And so it's really interesting to see. So we're not almost competing with each other. We're competing with the market and yeah. seeing how we all work together in it. So I think that's why it's people are nice and friendly and not necessarily worried that someone's stealing their work,
yeah.
but they're actually, you know, they're next in line even.
Yeah, that's a really great way to think about it. That does not exist in the blog community. That does not exist. I think everyone thinks that, like, if you miss that job, it's the last chance that job is ever going to come around. It's great that you guys have a different way of looking at that. So I want to talk a little bit more about the Pencil Factory, which okay. you've called home for how many years now?
I think 5 years.
Five years. How did you start, or how did you sort of get introduced to that community?
So that's actually another street hockey story.
Yes.
Where I was playing on my street hockey team, and I was actually captain of the team for a few years before.
Team is called?
Currently the Mega Touch.
Mega Touch. What and were you guys before? It was not Mega Touch.
We were Bad Touch.
The Bad Touch,
we were,
yeah.
We've gone through a number of names. Right now we are Mega Touch.
All right. Sounds kind of dirty. Yeah,
in a good way. And so I was playing, and one of my teammates, Jen Nabalski, was playing, and her boyfriend came to a few scrimmages and was playing. And this guy, Chris, and nice guy, and he was playing, and he was interested. So Jen sent me an email, and she goes, hey, my boyfriend Chris, he's been out a few times, wondering if he can join the team. So sure, so I'm sending an email. So I get this email from Chris Silas Neal. By the way, all of us three named illustrators, just to break the story, he is an illustrator, have three names anyway. And so I get this email from Chris Silas Neal, illustrator. I said, ooh, he's an illustrator. And this is before I moved into a studio. I was working from home. I actually had a weekly spot in the New York Times, so I was feeling pretty good about myself and my career. And so I clicked on Chris's website, and I said, oh, he's an illustrator. Let's see how he's doing. And this was a little bit more competitive
yeah.
because I wasn't actually around people.
Yeah.
And so I went to his work, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. He's been in the New York Times. Oh, he has a cover for Penguin. Oh, he has another cover. You know, and I went through this, and his work was great.
Yeah.
Just, all of a sudden, I was just like, whoa, this guy is, thought I was doing it. This guy is for real.
Yeah.
And so my mind was slightly blown because I didn't quite know. I knew these illustrators existed, but I didn't really have the in then.
Yeah.
And he invited me to an illustration breakfast they were doing weekly. And he had been in the Pencil Factory for, I think, a year or two at that point. And so we were starting to do, there were these weekly breakfasts with illustrators. And it was, you know, this was this moment where I was like, oh, who are all these people? There are all these illustrators out here who are struggling, succeeding, doing amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And from that, my friend Josh Cochran had just moved to New York from LA. I didn't actually know him then, now friend, then just some dude. And he was friends with all of them, and he was looking to start up a studio. And so he and another friend, Bryn Smith, who I didn't know until then either, started a studio, and they were looking for people. And so I said, hey, you know, you work from home. Are you interested in a studio? And I was a little hesitant because taking on a studio is at expense and a little yes. bit nerve-wracking. And my wife, who works in publishing, would come home on a Friday, and I'd be at home all week, and I'd be like, hey, what are we doing? Let's go out, you know, let's go to a bar, let's go to a restaurant.
Yeah.
She'd be like, I've been at work in Manhattan all week. Like, let's stay in, let's stay chill. I've seen people. I'm like, okay, and then we'll go out.
Yeah.
No. So she was sort of the impetus to be like,
you need to get out of the house.
You need to get the hell out of the house. And I knew that, but it helped to have that kick, and that was how I got into the Pencil Factory.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, the group of illustrators that are at the Pencil Factory are incredible. To look at, like, the body of work that you guys have done is pretty impressive. I love hearing about, like, when you're talking about the cover of, like, a Penguin book, I love hearing about what people's sort of, like, pie in the sky dream project is. Do you have one? Like, whether it's, like, the cover of The New Yorker or something that you would just love to do one day but haven't yet.
A blimp.
A blimp?
Sure.
What do you want to do with a blimp?
I don't know. I would like to have...
You want to have one, or do you want to draw
one? No, maybe both. I mean, it sort of seems like it's my dream job. I'm not sure I have a dream job. I mean, I always want to say that I have this incredible dream job, but I get really excited when these exciting jobs show up that I've never had before. And then the next exciting job that shows up that I haven't had before. And I want to say I have a dream job, but I don't really.
You already have a dream job then.
Stop.
I don't mean to sound like Oprah, but that's really, then you already have it.
I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, that's, I mean, obviously, like, no job is perfect, but if you already are so excited about what's coming across your desk, I think that's kind of what all of us are hoping to find one day.
I also get crappy things coming across.
It's got to be a balance. Yeah. So let's talk about a day in the life of Alex Ebbenmeyer. Walk us through what a day looks like in your normal life.
Okay, I wake up.
Is there a cat involved?
There's a cat involved. Actually, my morning routine is after my wife goes to work that I have to feed and play with the cat for at least 15 minutes. Otherwise, she won't let us sleep later that night or anything.
I know what that's like.
And I bike into the studio, and one of the glorious things is my studio is a mile and a half from home. I can bike there in 5 minutes. I can walk there in 15. It's great. It's not close enough that I'll just happen up there. Yeah. But it's also really easy to get to. And I'll get in, and then probably around 9:30, and I will immediately get down to work and just work really hard at the internet and... emailing and searching and reading the Times and Gothamist and catching up on things. And my studio mates always laugh at me because I'm like, oh, I don't feel like working yet. And they're like, yeah, we know. So generally, I'll either be working on a project. I'll either be working on a project or starting a project. My projects tend to be fairly short in time frame.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, my shortest projects are half a day, if that, and my longest projects may be gone for a week, but usually I'm juggling a few projects at the same time. And so it really depends on what section of the project I'm on. So I'll either be, there's sort of two major components to how I work. It's either the sketching, drawing portion of it, because everything I do is originally hand-drawn, and then digitized and brought in the computer and work digitally for coloring and...
Is it possible for people to only work with hand-drawn stuff anymore? Does that even exist? Or do most publications kind of require that you digitize everything?
Well, they have to digitize it at some point. I mean, there's maybe one or two illustrators who still hand-deliver artwork and have the companies shoot it, and that's more in publishing.
Okay, yeah.
So in terms of delivering it, you pretty much have to be able to get it digitally in some way to get it to people. I think there's actually been sort of a pushback to people doing more hand-drawn pieces to have that hand-drawn quality and watercolor and paint. I love working digital. I mean, that's where I am. I mean, I have the sketchbook style and I have this digital style, and I love working in my sketchbook, and occasionally people hire me to work in this sketchbook watercolor style, and I can't do it.
Yeah.
Because that's for me. It's really hard to then give to a client and sort of clean it up in a way that's usable. So I got totally off track.
So you're working.
So I'm working. And I mean, I don't...
How do you wind down and how do you balance all that out at the end of the day?
Well, recently we've had a large shipment of beers in our studio, which helps. But I feel like... I don't know. I'm pretty, if something gets wrapped up, I'm pretty good about leaving and just sort of getting out. I mean, sometimes I'll work too long, and I guess it really depends on, again, back to the excitement on a project. Yeah. If I'm really into a project, I can get completely lost and, you know, I look up and I'm like, it's, you know, it's 7 or 8 and I really got to get out of there. And then there are days where I'm just sitting there like, oh man, it's 5. I really have to get some work done because I haven't done anything today. I don't know.
It sounds like a pretty great day.
It's good.
It sounds fun. I like it. I'm going to come up to your studio more often.
I guess I should sell this as a more dedicated or organized or something. But
there's a lot of like stressful banging noise and like, oh my God, we're not going to finish on time happening in our floor. I feel like your floor sounds a bit chiller.
We're the chill floor.
Your chill floor. Well, we're just about out of time. So I want to end by letting people know what you've got coming up and what they can look out for your work.
What do I have coming up? Interesting. I've actually been doing a lot of interactive work recently.
Oh, cool.
So I've been doing some stuff for some pieces for the Wall Street Journal, which are actually coming up on their onlines, which I probably can't talk about.
Oh, too late.
I don't know. I'm also, This is humorous. I'm actually huge in the Netherlands right now. What? Huge. I do monthly pieces for a Dutch design magazine, which I've shown you. I'm not going to pronounce it because then I'm going to get in trouble with it.
We'll put it in the written version of this online.
And also, I'm starting up with an interactive client there, which that's just kicking off. So I'm going to keep that.
That's awesome.
They're in the Netherlands.
Okay.
And so it's kind of fun that actually working with international clients is really entertaining, just because that throws off sort of my, not throws off, but it changes when I'm talking to clients.
Yeah.
And so I have these email conversations at the crack of dawn now, and then I don't hear anything from them after, say, 2 in the afternoon because they've all gone home.
Yeah.
So those are projects that are going on right now. I just got back from vacation, so I'm sort of...
You're in a post-India glow.
This whole winding up thing to do work, I'm getting back into it.
You're easing back into it. Oh, I like it. It sounds like you have a very enviable work-life balance that everyone can look up to.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, thanks for being with us today, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
And everyone listening, you can check out Alex's work at ebben.com. It's EBEN.com. Thanks for being here, Alex.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.